Previously on Dakota Town Hall.
It was veto day, right? I guess we wrapped up session and it was pretty, I guess, uneventful.
I mean, no vetoes for the first time in, you know, X amount of years. It's the, I think the numbers were, it's the third session ever.
What's the point of getting a veto brain if you ain't going to heat that sumbitch up once in a while? I hate it when no the vetoes. Governor doesn't get to veto something.
I know, right? Isn't that just a shame?
It's a real shame.
Just,
not a line item, nothing.
Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly political podcast.
And welcome back to another episode of South Dakota's most listened to political podcast with Jake in the East. I'm Murdoch in the West, and this is Dakota Town Hall. You could be listening a number of ways to the show. You could be listening to it on the radio here in South Dakota on a station like The Cowboy in Rapid City, or you could be listening on your favorite podcast player. Big show this week, Jake. Bringing in the big
show.
Guns.
Bringing in a guy who's been on this show. I think it's probably his third time coming around. Bit of a household name here in South Dakota, I'd say. It's our lone congressman, Dusty Johnson. Dusty, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back and to coming the show, off, sir.
Coming off of your election announcement, and you know, good news for you, there's no primary. You get to roll right to November.
It is a lot harder getting signatures than people realize. I mean, this happens every
is.
Few years.
It really
I mean,
is.
Pretty serious candidates go out and they think 2,100 signatures, that doesn't sound very hard. I mean, we have a team. We had 40 different people who turned in petitions for us. I mean, we had to hustle. And listen, even we got 15% of our signatures thrown out, and 25 or 30% is a lot more likely. So, listen, making the ballot's a major accomplishment.
No doubt it is. I mean, you have a great team around you, too. I think of people like, you know, Caleb Weiland and Haley Halverson, a lot of great people on your team.
Yeah, that is one area where I've just been very blessed, really, throughout the career, whether I was in the private sector or government. I just think if you got good people, anything's possible.
Have you do you have any peers in the House that have ever had this happen before? Like, what do you do when you don't have a primary? You still got to, you know, do the whistle stop tour a little bit, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, and I do that even when it's not an election year. I mean, I actually love getting out there. People are always like, oh, you work so hard. I don't think it's work. I mean, I really love, yesterday we were in Fairfax, earlier in the day we were in Wagner. I mean, I love it. I would so much rather be out actually talking to citizens about their government than I would, you know, just sitting at home answering emails. So, I mean, I love it. You certainly get some members of Congress who don't have primaries, but everybody's either got a real primary or a real general. Nobody gets a free pass in this world. And even if you think you have a free pass, maybe you don't. I mean, there are always some stunners, and those stunners generally happen across the country because people aren't paying attention. They're taking it for granted.
Well, that's, you know, definitely you have a race in the general, and, you know, in South Dakota, it's very difficult for Democrats to kind of coalesce around one candidate and have an effective race. But that being said, you're right. Probably still a race, right? You can't take it for granted.
Well, I mean, sorry to interrupt, Jake. The Republicans are doing a pretty good job of trying to trip themselves up just as well. I mean,
not in this race.
As your buddy Toby Doden can do.
Oh,
could be a perfect example.
Well, I my wife and I used to live in Kansas 25 years ago, and that was a state that at that time was starting to come apart at the seams, the Republican Party was. And they started to elect Democrat governors. I mean, Kansas is just as conservative as South Dakota is. But Democrats, I think Democrats have had something like 3 out of the last 5 governors in Kansas because it would really became 3 parties. The Republican Party split in 2. They continue to fight like mad. It does not advance the cause of liberty. It does not result in more conservative victories. This infighting is stupid. It's bad. It's toxic. And frankly, it's not good for the country or the world. The world deserves a sane right of center party in America. I mean, we're just too important to dissolve into petty squabbling. So hopefully in South Dakota, we can keep her on the tracks.
Well, and I think to you know, when you look at our general elections, generally speaking, the Republican Party does come around one candidate. They don't kind of splinter off to independent candidates or something like that. So, I mean, we may fight quite a bit in our primaries, but we do kind of come around one candidate when it comes to November.
Yeah, I'm seeing less of that. I mean, that's always been my attitude, right? I mean, you fight like heck in the primaries. Now, hopefully they're respectful and principled fights rather than, you know, the politics of personal destruction.
And there's the rub.
Yeah, and there's the rub. I mean, increasingly primaries are about destroying the other guy or the other gal. It's not really talking about a worldview about, hey, you know, how tactically do we advance the cause of conservatism? It's just people are throwing full-fledged haymakers, and listen, I get it. I mean, I'll get in and mix it up as well. But there's a difference. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, I just mean there's a difference, right? Like, I mean, yes. that leads to what we have here in some races in South Dakota, right? I think we're going to see the return of, you know, in some races, if they win, more on the establishment side, the return of the wonky appropriator. You know what I mean? The municipal lawyer, Jason Green in 34 is a perfect example, who's going to go up against your former opponent, Taffy. You know, that end of the party, I think, has a real shot at maybe, you know, getting a foothold back in.
Yeah. Listen, there are a lot of really good candidates running in the legislative races. I just think primaries are super unpredictable. I mean, turnout is low. I mean, in a pretty good turnout year for a primary, you might get 100,000 folks. That means that you can win or lose a statewide race with 50,000 votes. That's a little over 5% of South Dakota. And so I just always thought rolling into my primaries, like, oh my gosh, like if 5% of South Dakotans can kick me to the curb, that is, listen, it'd be great if we had more participation in the primaries. And because we don't have any statewide primary elections this year, who knows what turnout is going to be like? I don't think any candidate can take anything for granted, no matter how well positioned they think they are.
Oh, wow. I guess I'm probably a little slow to the game, but that's just kind of dawning on me, is like, now these district dudes are going to have to do it on their own, because you ain't going to be swinging by all the time, giving them giving them the nudge they usually get.
Great, love that.
there's your 80 votes, Jake.
I mean, I'm still a big team player, and I still believe in turnout. We're still going to spend some real money and some real resources in reminding South Dakotans to show up and vote. And I'm still going to be out gathering data and still out helping candidates. I mean, we're going to do a lot of the things. We're not laying anybody off. I mean, we've got a number of full-timers and a number of part-timers. These are still really hardworking leaders, and they're going to have stuff to do.
My son still has to hold signs for Dusty yet. We got to wait for a race, a competitive race, you know. He still owes you one cycle of sign holding.
Dusty, you're not just campaigning. You're also busy in D.C. You mentioned before the show about a bill that had to do with ocean shipping. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, my colleagues in Congress sometimes wonder aloud why a guy who might literally be the furthest from both shores as anybody in America is one of the real experts in global supply chains and ocean shipping and maritime law. And it's because we ship out $7 billion worth of goods in our state, manufactured goods, ag goods. We can't eat as many soybeans as we grow. We can't eat as much beef as we grow in South Dakota. So and 60% of our soybeans, as a for example, get shipped overseas. And we want to feed more of the world. Like, they want to buy our dairy and our beef and our corn and our beans and our biofuels. So let's make it easy for them. We have in the past had China has not been playing fair. We saw during during COVID that 60% of the containers were going back to Asia empty, while American ag goods were rotting on the dock. All of these foreign flagged ocean carriers are, all of the big ocean carriers are foreign flagged. None of them are American. And so I passed a bill a couple of years ago, big bill that just made it clear they have to play fair. They have to provide some reciprocity. And 2 weeks ago, we added on another piece to that, which, and it passed out of the House with like only 25 no votes. I mean, 400 yes votes and 25 no votes. And strongly bipartisan. It just makes it clear we're not going to give all of our data to the Chinese shipping exchanges or the Chinese logistical software. The Chinese Communist Party, Jake Murdoch, they are giving away some of these softwares, trying to get everybody on the same platform so they can have our data about everything we're shipping and where it's going to and when it's going to get there. And my bill just makes it clear that dog is not going to hunt.
I read a or heard an article about like this is an example of this the containers that take the automated crane software that can take the containers off. Apparently, all of those were created in China too. So now China can have access to all of that data as well.
Yeah, 90% of the cranes at American ports are running on those platforms. This is a lot like the problem we saw 10 years ago with Huawei, where the Chinese company Huawei bought their way a huge amount of market share. And then all of a sudden, national security experts said, wait a second, there are lots of ways in which this is a huge liability and is actively being used by the CCP. To tap into our telecommunications infrastructure. So our country came together in a bipartisan way and said, everybody's got to get that equipment out of their systems. We're going to have a rip and replace policy. Get it out of there, put something else in. And the fact that we let that happen periodically is just, it's not, we need to do better. And so that's why I'm on the forefront of trying to make sure that we're not giving the Chinese Communist Party control over these huge platforms.
Well, and you know, we kind of take a lot of our global shipping for granted, I would say. I mean, look what happened in Baltimore. All of a sudden, we have a port shut down. And you go, oh, these things really matter. And our infrastructure around them are very, very important. So, you know, this doesn't have to do with as much, you know, bridges or anything like that. But still, it's a critically important infrastructure that we don't focus on enough, I would say.
Yeah, and the $7 billion that I'm talking about that South Dakota ships overseas, that's $7,700 for every South Dakotan. Can you imagine how much poorer our state would be if we took, you know, almost $8,000 a head out of this state? I mean, it's hugely important. And so getting it right is worth our time.
I always think of things like I saw Luke Lindbergh was recently placed on the, I think it's like Ireland and South Dakota Trade Commission or whatever. And I'm thinking, why do we have a trade commission with Ireland? But you're right. It's things like this where we're shipping our resources globally. It's very important.
Yeah, it's a much bigger number than most people realize. Because we're landlocked, I just don't think people know how much other countries want to buy the stuff we're making.
Mm-hmm. Does any? I'm going back a few years. The Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement or something like that is anything like that come into play with these conversations of like that coming back to life?
No. And I would say there is broad bipartisan frustration with the Biden administration. They don't have a trade agenda. They've made it very clear they're not going to do any more bilateral agreements. They're not going to do any more multilateral agreements. They're not going to open up any more markets to American goods. And it's really frustrating. The trade ambassador, Katherine Tai, is brilliant. She's certainly capable of doing incredible work, but she's been hamstrung by this administration. And that's why two Democrats and two Republicans, including me, formed the Agricultural Trade Caucus, just trying to push this administration to do a better job of opening up these markets. I'll give you one example. The number five market for South Dakota corn is Colombia. It's not because they eat a particularly lot of corn. It's not because they're particularly a populated country. It's not because they're particularly close to America. It's just that we have an agreement with Colombia, and it makes it easy for American corn to flow there at a good price. If we had more agreements, we'd have more seamless flow of our products like that.
So what's with the lack of trade focus on this administration? It's just that they just aren't focused on it. That's why it isn't there. Or is there a reason behind it?
I mean, they really, really care about the environment, and they really, really care about trade unions. And they look at some of these other countries that don't, they require that they meet American standards in a whole host of environmental and union ways. And they're more focused on trying to impose those new rules opposed to opening up new markets.
It's interesting to see like a 100-year difference to see the union, the trade union argument turn into a half a protection Smoot-Hawley type. You know what I mean? Like that's just sounds so polar opposite than what we're used to out of either a Republican or a Democratic argument on trade.
Yeah, and we clearly in both parties are in a more populist era where more and more folks on both sides are saying, why would I care about anybody else in the world? And it's actually pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, when America continues to punch above our very sizable weight in the world, because we've got buddies. Like when we roll into a bar, we're rolling in with our squad, and that makes a big difference. You just think about China. I mean, who's China rolling with?
North Korea.
Iran, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a bunch of losers, right? Whereas we're rolling in with people like Australia, Japan, United Kingdom, Germany. I mean, these are folks who have their act together. And listen, none of those countries are perfect. They all make big mistakes too. But I would so much rather be able to count on Australia than North Korea. And when it comes, listen, America makes awesome stuff. People want to buy our awesome stuff. Let's not make it hard for them to give us their money.
Yeah, that's hard to argue.
You mentioned, you know, a lot of this has to do with at least your the Ocean Shipping Reform or Foreign Implementation Act has to do with a lot with China. That's not the only bill that had to do with China.
Boy, that's a tough one to get off the tongue, Jake.
It is.
Don't you have a snappy name for that?
That one's hard.
Come on, man. You don't have one like whale or some sort of, you know, oceanistic name we can give this thing?
Is it OSRA? Is that what you guys call it? Is that
kind of some people call it OSRA. Some people OSRA, call it OSRA. Okay. Yeah.
But we also have some stuff with China when it comes to TikTok. The House passed a bill that would force sale TikTok from the ByteDance company. What's your thoughts on that? And where do you think it's going to go now?
Love it. I'm a huge proponent. I was one of the main sponsors at the press conference where we unveiled this thing. And it took me a little while to get there. I mean, I said, oh my gosh, again, I'm a freedom guy. So what are we doing telling people that with their own money on their own phones, they can't download their own app? But I'm on the select committee on China. We've talked to dozens of national security experts. Everybody is telling us that this is that letting the Chinese Communist Party have that much control over the American public square is D-U-M dumb. And during the height of the Cold War, we would never have let the Soviets buy the CBS Evening News, the LA Times, the Wall Street Journal, WNAX Radio, the Rapid City Journal. Regardless of what the content was on those platforms, we would have understood how dangerous it was to give the Soviets that kind of control over the American public square. And TikTok is in many respects a bigger player in the American public square than all of those things combined would have been in the 80s or the 70s. I mean, we got, you know, a majority of people under 18 say that the primary way they get news is from TikTok. So I just think, listen, they can put anything they want out there as long as it's owned by anybody else other than a literal foreign adversary of our nation. And that's what the bill would do. It would just say, you got to go sell. And I think it's absolutely the right thing to do.
If it would sell, like what happens then? Would they sell? Would they block it off would they just take it off the market in America? What would be the result?
I think they'll end up selling because they're not going to want to just take it off the market because that's going to be a huge destruction of value there. So I think they'd rather sell it to somebody, probably sell TikTok writ large, but they may sell the American piece of TikTok and still run the Chinese piece of TikTok elsewhere. We're just going to have to see. But to me, it's pretty clear they're not just going to shut it down.
So who?
And they have about 180 days to do so, I think. And I mean, kind of the question is, are they going to try to call our bluff and see if we force them to actually shut it down? It's kind of up in the air, though.
Who buys that, right? Like, I'm certain there's American companies that would take a shot at that, but I'm not sure without necessarily disagreeing with your argument, I'm not sure the upside is for Meta or Apple to own TikTok either, because I trust, you know, them about as much as the Communist Party.
There's been talks of consortiums, and I can't remember the names of investment groups that are looking at putting the money together to get it done. But it's also a very, very expensive company. It's, if not one of the big, it is the biggest social media.
I mean, that's just it. I just don't know how it's like buying the moon.
It's very expensive. Not everyone has that money available.
Well, I hope it's not Meta and Facebook. I just like competition out there. I mean, that's true in every marketplace. I mean, I don't like it anytime anybody's got too many eggs in one basket. But I don't, I mean, number one, it hasn't passed the Senate. It hasn't been signed into law by the president. So it's not like the 180 day clock has started yet. And I would say the Chinese Communist Party actively seeking to destroy American exceptionalism. I just don't know that we can say that about Meta. I mean, I get your point, Murdoch. I'm not sure any of these guys are angels, but the Chinese Communist Party they're about as bad a guys as you can get.
Sure, but we have an active and not just what's the word for the lawsuit when it's goofy?
Frivolous?
It's not frivolous. There's active antitrust lawsuits that aren't frivolous in the trade commission right now against these same companies. I don't disagree with you, certainly.
I mean, if what you're saying is Meta and Facebook are bad in the way that typical corporate bad guys are bad, right? Trying to crush their competitors, trying to go out and make a ton of money. Yes, that is, they are like that. Very different than hating America and wanting to destroy America. I don't think
my argument is that black and white. I think there's people at Meta that are great for the fiber of America, and I don't think it's like Meta's Darth Vader. I think there are good people at Meta and goofy people at Meta, right? But I think in the same way, I think there's probably a couple of communists in China that aren't actively trying to destroy us. They're just also trying to feed their kids too. It's nuanced, and it's just real hard to just be like on one, you know what I mean? But I'm not disagreeing with you either.
I think this does lead to the idea of we need more comprehensive data privacy laws in America for Meta, for any of it. We need more comprehensive data privacy laws that actually are formed in the current age of the internet, that are not using the old standards of the 90s to define what our data privacy is.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. I would say the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party, I don't know that we need to have a lot of nuance on how we view this.
Agreed.
I mean, this is, you know, just take Xi Jinping's word for it. I mean, his public statements are chilling as to how they view American leadership and the rules-based international order. I just I wouldn't want us to fall into a false equivalency here.
And I think it's important to note that this law, there's been a lot of misinformation on this law and what it actually does. Specifically, it forces the sale of TikTok and any company owned by foreign adversaries, which are defined, I believe, currently as North Korea, Iran, Russia, and China. So it's not like this is some blanket bill allowing the president to ban anything he wants.
Just in case North Korea comes up with, you know, sick sock or whatever the next thing is, you know?
Time's almost up with you, Dusty. Let's talk about a small topic, Ukraine funding.
You've got 3 minutes. Go.
That's your hot 3 minutes. You know, this is the current administration is trying to work with Speaker Mike Johnson to kind of figure out funding. He's floated the idea of it being a loan, coming from freeze Russian assets. Where is this funding at? Where do you think it's going to go?
First off, I would say, yeah, if we can repo Russian oligarch and Russian government assets and give that to Ukraine, you know, count me in. Normally, I mean, I don't think we should do that. I don't think we should be doing that a lot around the world, right? I mean, I think you want a banking and a financial system that people can count on and the government doesn't sweep in and take your money, right? But this is, I mean, Russia invaded another country illegally. And that is a big, big problem. Listen, a loan, I think, would be fine. Ukraine, once they get back on their feet, they've got incredible natural resources. And I think they would be in a position over a long time to be able to pay back some loans. So I'm all about that. Listen, we've got to give them the bullets and the missiles they need to defend their country, though. I mean, we could talk about tactics. We can talk about the nuances of exactly how to get this done. But can we give these people some bullets? And I'm not, listen, it's not about blank checks. It's not just about writing them checks for billions of dollars. We should not do that. But when it comes to lethal aid, I mean, let's get these guys what they need to defend their country. I mean, when did this become such a hot take?
That's just what's interesting. We've never been the country that really kind of snips about the bullets. We usually kind of send the bullets and then we kind of fight about the, you know, wheat afterwards. That's usually our MO. And this time around, we're fighting about the bullets.
People try to make this argument that, you know, the Ukrainian government is flawed, which of course it is, or that, you know, the Ukraine has not been a perfect country, which of course it has not been. But listen, America has always been the kid on the playground. That when you see a bad guy jump a kid at recess and start to beat him up, we're going to get involved and pull that big kid off the little kid. And we don't ask ourselves, geez, you know, did the little kid, is he from right next door? Or is he from, you know, across the street in a bad neighborhood? Or maybe did this kid pull a girl's pigtails 3 years ago? We just say, listen, this is not how we solve disputes, right? I mean, we try to keep order in the playground because we're the good guys, damn it. And listen, there are times we fall into a more isolationist way of thinking. In May of 1941, a big majority of Americans did not want America to continue lend-lease with the British. We were giving Brits supplies and bullets so that they unilaterally, on their own, could hold the line against Germany. And I am so proud that American politicians, including President Roosevelt, at that time said, no, even though it's not the most popular thing to do, we're going to continue to help our ally, the United Kingdom, hold the line. And I just think, damn it, invading another country is illegal. We should not turn a blind eye to this. Let's get these guys some bullets.
Just look at 1916. It's the same thing. We've just got a history of, you know, supporting the right side. There's no other way to say it, right? Mm-hmm. It's odd that it's now the debate it is. And I think the Israelness probably complicates it now. And you know, just like a TikTok bill, it's all very new. Foreign policy never polls well, right? It doesn't help the people it's getting polled.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, it's just there are no slam dunks in foreign policy. I mean, these things are always insanely complicated, and it's a messy world. And what I do know is that if America, right now, because America has pulled back leadership, a majority of poll respondents in Africa, the public opinion surveys, say that they view China as the leader of the world rather than America. We have turned our face away from the global South. We have let China move in. And this is making for a far more dangerous world for Americans. I got to tell you, if China's the world leader, things are not going to end well for Americans. And we got to stay there. And we got to understand that the world wants us to help them lead.
Well said.
Well, Congressman Dusty Johnson, thank you so much for joining us. I know you have to run. We appreciate the time you give us, and enjoy Mitchell while you can.
Happy campaigning.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Have a good day, man.
Hey, Congressman.
That was good.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Always great to have Dusty on. He always so nice to give us some of his time. He's a busy man, and good to have him.
Dakota Town Hall will be right back after a quick word from our partners.
Hi, I'm Kevin Phillips. Hey, do you like the podcasts? I've got a podcast called Kevin Phillips 40 Years of Stories and Songs. And my latest podcast involves my favorite athletes. I listed my top five favorite athletes in almost every professional sport. They're not necessarily the best, but they're my favorites. Some of them may be yours too. Find it wherever you find podcasts. Kevin Phillips 40 Years of Stories and Songs.
On the latest episode of Bounce from the Roadhouse.
Okay, your argument is, I don't know.
Bacteria in the shower.
Yeah.
You said you brush your teeth twice a day. So does that mean you take two showers a day?
I will grab it out of the shower and brush my teeth outside the shower.
So you do come out of the box a little bit.
I mean, do you brush your teeth before or after the shower? Usually everybody's an after the shower thought. It's like some people even eat breakfast first, right?
At least you're not doing that in the shower.
Yeah. No.
Listen to Bounce from the Roadhouse anywhere where a podcast is available.
South Dakota's premier political podcast.
So we could just kick into some new topic.
We got to make a couple corrections from last week.
Two. Okay.
Not corrections, just additions. You know, we recorded on Wednesday last week, and it was kind of the middle of the candidates still coming in because it's still a time to come in via registered mail. Two of those I noted. There's probably other ones we missed too. In the race in District 14 House, Taylor Rayfell and Tyler Tortson, they do have a primary there.
They do have a primary there.
Tony Kaser, I don't know him. That's my next door neighbor's over there in District 14. So there is a primary there. Also, District 13 House, a last minute John Hughes has joined the race against Tony Van Hise and Brad Jankard and Penny Baybridge. Barbridge.
I keep saying Baybridge as well. Sorry, Penny.
Yeah. You may know John Hughes from, well, you went on your side of the state, but the Baltic fight that happened last year with the mayor, was it the mayor's race in Baltic?
Yeah, yeah. Was he the recall dude?
Yes, he was okay. On that side of the table. You know, he's definitely in that, what'd you call it? Tumbling Guns?
Tumbling Guns crowd of the Republican Party.
Tumbling Guns crowd. So, you know, that does add more of a race for our friends Tony and Brad over in District 13 House. But, you know, like I said last week, you get a good opponent means you get more money for your race.
Okay, but don't, so this is, so Tony and Brad are maybe the, you know, Tony and Jankard are the establishment, if that's a fair way to say it, right?
Sure.
And are Penny and John more so rude if we call them all the Tumbling Guns crowd? But let's just call the Tumbling Guns.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go with that. I would say that's correct assessment of that race.
I don't know. Why.
That's the only two I was pointing out. We messed up on. Not messed up on. They just weren't in yet when we did our show.
Right.
Also, so
we don't break news. More. We bend it. This is all a little loose.
Yes.
You should always Google us on a check our source a little.
Yeah, which is like why, you know, shocking that Congressman Dustin Johnson wants to come on the show and talk real topics with us when we're just, you know, shooting from the hip half the time.
The Chinese government isn't meta. I bet he didn't turn his camera on, but I bet you could hear his eye roll on that one. I'm gonna have to walk that one back later. Dang it.
You know. You and I can do something that Governor Noem can't do, and that's visit two of our reservations here in South Dakota.
Oh, that's right. Is that's happening again? Is that because she did a thing trying to telling them to kick the cartels out?
Yes, and then she kind of doubled down by stating that some of the tribal leadership might be in bed with the cartels.
Wow, really?
So, yeah, she made some comments in March about that. I don't remember the exact comments, but that upset more of them, which is, I think, understandable to upset them. But the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe has also banned Governor Noem. So now she cannot visit there or the Rosebud or Pine Ridge. Let me get that correct.
I mean, it's not like she was going to have to sell her vacation home there.
No, and I mean, these are, I want to say, they're largely symbolic, right?
Yeah.
It is a reminder of the interesting relationship we have with reservations, you know, state versus federal, and that they can do this. I mean, they do have different rules than we do. Noem has requested the federal government audit the tribes on their expenses. So for federal funding, it's an interesting fight.
All federal funding has to get audited from time to time, and there also previously, I'm not really trying to take a side one way or the other, but there has been at times a history of, you know, money misspent. You know, I'm not saying that was criminal, but you know what I mean. But like, also, I don't know. We're all the color of milk. We don't get to say anything about what happens on Pine Ridge, buddy. You know what I mean? Like,
I know. And the politics there are totally different than our own. I mean, it's tribal politics are totally different than state politics.
There are. I'll say it this way: there are administrations that have a working relationship with the tribes, which is always going to be complicated because it's complicated, right? It seems like maybe the next administration might have better luck, better timing. And I'm not trying to place that all on her feet, but I don't think she's necessarily doing herself any favors.
Right. It's there. I think it'd be very difficult for Noem to change kind of the rhetoric that she's had with the tribes. And not, I don't think it was ever necessarily intentional to be adversarial with them.
No,
but it's just where it's at now. And I don't think it's going to change that. And you kind of need to reset with the next administration.
And then you see, you know, on the same, I can defend her too. It's not like she hates Native Americans. You know what I mean? You
no,
see that nonsense
no.
on Facebook. Knock it off. Anyways.
Right. I mean, it's just, you know, she is scapegoating them a little bit, I think, on some of this stuff with the cartels. But at the same time, there's probably questions that need to be answered there, and there is significant issues with drug addictions in our reservations. So,
well, and some of that was like, you know, you got to defend, I suppose, in the campaign sense, some of these National Guard trips, where you, right. Where you go take the, get the boat picture and, do the barbed wire stuff or whatever you're doing. I don't know. Oh, hey, we got to go back to new candidate roundup.
Oh, what's that?
I forgot something. We have our second South Dakota candidate who is in D.C. on January 6th.
Yeah, I don't love that. No.
That makes two.
What's his name?
Mark Mowry. He's gonna run for District 31. I'd like to see less threes in these district numbers. I'm
not gonna lie. I read the title of past blog posts, and it's like 31, and I'm like, yeah,
dang it,
checks out.
Yeah, darn it. So like, that's two versus is it Pat Bauman? He's in 30, which that'll probably help him. But like, hey, District 31, ask where your candidates were in January.
Well, this guy falls into all those, I don't know if it's election truther or what you want to call it, the hand counting.
He's
ballot.
One of those hand counting dudes.
I mean, you saw it. It was in McPherson County that got thrown out again. I think it got thrown out in Lawrence County, too. They're all the exact same petitions, basically trying to get them to violate the American Disability Act. They want to get rid of, all electronics at all in our voting systems. That includes the machines that help people who with disabilities make their votes.
These electoral Luddites, this is what it is.
It's just a lot of nonsense. I mean, there is no facts behind it. They think that every boogeyman's hiding in the electronic machines we use to tabulate or to help people with disabilities. They want all hand counting. I mean, it takes for Minnehaha County to get their votes in?
It's like a week. Year. It takes a week.
Not yeah.
Kind of by hand.
And who wants to hand count? We're a population center. It's going to take us forever. But we got that great Leah Anderson in our county auditor, so we'll see what happens there.
So a little along those lines, but not quite along those lines on election, blah, blah, blah. I saw John Wick said he intends to maybe as a party, the Republican Party, they'll fight this open primaries.
Yeah, that I saw that announcement as well. They, of course, refer to it as jungle primaries.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that, can we? So jungle primaries seems to be the negative name, right? Like, if you're trying to throw it under the bus, you call it jungle primaries.
Well, they want to make it look more chaotic than it really is, okay. Right? And, we've been on the fence for it, against it, multiple times in the show and had a lot of different opinions on it. I think it's a difficult discussion to really... I don't know. This is going to be a hard one for what people, how they message this, how they get it across. I mean, you guess you keep calling it jungle primaries, that might do some work, but it's not going to be an easy one for either side.
Well, it's not the same top-down Republican Party, right? It used to be you could kind of count on, hey, man, if the Republican Party central party says, here's the phrase, then all the county people get, well, here's the phrase. And now you don't really got to spend a bunch of money and time and labor to get, a no or a yes or whatever the line is. Well, now that don't quite work because Pennington and Minnehaha and a few of these other Republican county operations are, on an island of sorts. The
past. I don't know.
Can't
I think
really
this is
do
one
that anymore.
I think the SDGOP on this one will be able to sell this to the county ones pretty easily. The county, like those far right groups, are terrified of this idea. They think it's going to be like Democrats taking over when open primaries happens. That's what they believe. So I don't think it'll be hard for them to sell this to county parties and keep a consistent line on this one.
That's what makes Republicans like me for it. I don't care if you call it the tornado primary.
No, it's, I'm with you on that. I think it actually gets better candidates elected, especially Republicans, better candidates elected.
Also, so, Thune and Dusty and these guys, none of them hate it. They're all staying out of it.
Exactly, which says a lot, in my opinion.
That's it's not like there's going to be a $4 million campaign to, I guess if the Republicans are smart, they would, because they got a 90-year win history right now,
Right.
But it's not like that changes,
No, but it seems like the sensible people are staying out of it, is what I've noticed.
I mean, I'm not saying it don't have a, and then this is what happens, right? I think there's going to be some gooberness that follows through with it, but I don't know. It might be the one big swing against the tumbling guns crowd. You're up for it. Okay. What else we got cooking, dude?
Dan Kipley announces candidacy for Minnehaha County Commission. You probably met Dan Kipley before. He's a good guy. recently retired from what is it, Knife River? Is that I'm saying the right thing? It's people who run the giant pit on off of I-29, the quarry.
That's called Knife River. That's a lot. I've always just called it the pit.
I know. I'm gonna misstate that, and Dan's gonna text me. But he's running for county commission. That'd be a father-son duel. We talked about that a little bit.
Oh yes, previously. That's that race. Okay, that's
he's
right.
Officially that announced right. Now. And so he's out there. Dan's a great guy and would be great at the county commission, I think.
And, I want to say a nice note to Chris Sanders. I see between the Toby Doden crowd and the people who hate Pat Powers on Facebook. And, they're all kind of kicking this Chris Sanders kid. It is hard to get 2,100 ballots, especially when you're generally more or less probably trying to do it yourself, door to door. You know what I mean? Like that kid, he ran into my boy at Starbucks, tried to pitch him on the whole deal. You know what I mean? Good for you guys who made the attempt. And there's probably a couple of state house people who didn't make it, or state senate people who didn't make it, or you didn't get something signed right or whatever. It's harder than you think. It happens to a lot of people. And don't let it kind of squirrel you away from running again, right? Like, we need the people making the attempts.
And, I don't know Chris Sanders at all, but I have heard he's a very nice person. And, that stinks. It stinks you don't get there. You made a lot, you announced and you put kind of a lot of your heart on the line and you don't get there. That stinks. That really bites.
Man, you know how hard it is to run, and then lose by 80 votes.
80 votes, yeah. No, I know exactly how that feels. Not doing that this time.
Hey, I saw. So last week I got to be on the Dakota Scout.
Yes, you did great.
And I've been reading. Thank you. I've been. It wasn't as fun. It was very fun. But I like doing. I like doing that show with you. I think it feels weird when I'm not with you. So have you seen the art in the Dakota Scout emails you get for that Jordan Deffenberg kid?
Oh yeah, the new ones. They changed a little bit.
All in. These bright neon ones?
They flash now. Have you been on Dakota Scout? They flash colors now on the thing. It's a lot.
It's a slick move because it's going to be, you probably aren't going to be as funded as some of the other candidates. And you're a, young, cool. You look like you're on tour with Rainbow Kitten Surprise, right? You just looks awesome. Yep. And you got to make your art pop. It does. Without making him look ridiculous.
I don't know. I think it looks kind of ridiculous.
It does look I'm a big fan of it, though. I thought it was real clever. I thought it was eye grabbing. You need to you got to change it after a couple weeks, get everybody's attention, and then sound normal.
I'm not supporting this guy. I'm supporting Richard Thomas in this race. But I thought the exact same thing when I saw it. I'm like, that's clever. He's trying to make himself very much this eccentric candidate out there a little bit, and for how he looks. Just because he's got the mustache and the long hair, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it's a good brand thing for him.
Like about it is then when he's doing media or I haven't heard a ton of him talking, but with the stuff I have, you see a lot of these young fiery performer candidates and they are always, that one cowboy kid thinks Mayor Paul's a crook. They're always flamethrowing. This guy has all the bright ads, but then you meet him and he's real calm, cool, collected, more commune. Kate is a commune kid. I like him.
I was in the St. Pat's parade and his group wasn't too far behind the Republican group. He had a huge turnout. He was wearing a bright green jumpsuit.
Oh man.
And he has those lime green shirts and lime green signs, and he was out there working hard, credit to him.
There's candidates who listen to this show and they've been sitting in meetings with me and they always try to bring I'd really like this neat color scheme. And I'm like, do you use red, white, and blue? No, I think I'd really like it. No, stop it. It's everything else is new Coke. It's red, white, and blue. You're running an election. You ain't selling hamburgers. Knock it off. But this Jordan kid, done right. It's done right.
I was giving Jankert a lot of grief for doing green and gold. I was giving him a lot of grief for that, but it worked out for the St. Patrick's Parade.
You know, just green and gold well is Mike Derby. He's used the colors of the hills.
Colors of the hills. Anybody that's I don't think Jacob's Irish at all, but I feel like a lot of the Irish cans use the green and gold sort of
Duffy.
Thing.
That's what I'm telling Duffy. Steve Duffy, the fighting Irish Duffies, man. You know what I mean? He's the perfect purple candidate right now. He just has to get through the primaries. There's a story that came out today, a couple days ago. We should end with, sir.
Sure.
This is not really political, but I found it pretty interesting. This is from South Dakota Searchlight. Josh Hare, am I saying his name right?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
He's been on the show before.
Josh. Yeah, he was a good guest. We should have him back on and maybe talk about this. Okay, 80%, this is the headline, 80% of tested surface water in South Dakota fails to meet state standards.
Okay.
80% of the river streams and lakes tested, I'm just reading this, 80% of the river streams and lakes tested in South Dakota are too polluted for at least one of their intended uses. Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources recently released the final draft of its 2024 report. The state has criteria to ensure a body of water is safe for its intended use, be that swimming or fishing or recreational or production, whatever, right? Irrigation, supplying water for cities. This covers the state's almost 600 lakes and reservoirs. About 180 of them have been tested, but so far 80% of them are, not in great shape.
It looks like a lot of it has to do with runoff from agricultural, soils, and things are developed for agricultural purposes.
Yeah. Okay. And this is anecdotal, right? But, like, I grew up in Elcester, South Dakota, and you know what we did? And we loved doing this when we were little, Jake. We'd go fishing. We'd go catfishing on the Big Sioux River. My dad grew up doing it. His dad grew up doing it. I grew up doing it. You know who didn't grow up doing it? My kids, Jake. So, like, that's livestock waste management. That's not, I'm not anti-corporate or anti-ag. It's just the unfortunate byproduct of being a very successful agricultural production state. And then maybe we didn't know what we know in the 70s and 80s and 90s, right?
Right. Well, I think of groups like the Friends of the Big Sioux River. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're working actively trying to get the Sioux River to be significantly more clean. And actually, I think if it gets swimmable at some point, it's like their long-term goal. Like, you can actually, like, swim in the Big Sioux River.
Go back swimming in the Big Sioux again?
Yeah. So that's, like, one of their goals. There's definitely a lot of great groups that are trying to get this done. And, it's an interesting article. I had not seen it until you brought it up. Love to have Josh on talk about that a little more.
Yeah, I'd like to know, like, how poisoned, right? Like, it's because right. It's got a pass-fail thing. And so, like, I want to know. I want to know where the blinky the fish areas are a little,
Yeah, like, can I drink it? Out somewhere, can I drink the Big Sioux?
The new water? Bit on Dakota Town Hall. Can I drink it?
Can I drink it? Once a week we bring in water from random places in South Dakota and try to drink it, see what happens.
We do favorite burger and can I drink it? We got bits no one will steal.
Because they're not that good.
Read that story on South Dakota Searchlight, and again, it couldn't be a more important time for America to have a stronger journalism backbone.
And I was just going to say that, too. I mean, shout out to all the great journalism we have here in South Dakota, and it's continually growing and becoming stronger. Dakota Scout, Searchlight, Sioux Falls Live, News Watch, Sioux Falls
Dakota
Simplified,
News
Sioux Falls Business, Dakota News Now, Akello. There's so many great groups that we are really fortunate to have.
They never list Dakota Town Hall in that, do they?
They don't. No, and they don't list the Argus. They don't list the Argus anymore either, though.
Well, that's true. That's fair. All right, sir. That's the show.
That's the show. I think it was a fun one. We enjoyed Congressman Dusty Johnson. We got to talk a little more South Dakota politics. So always a great show.
From Jake in the East, I'm Murdoch in the West, and you are one of the fantastic listeners of South Dakota's most listened to political podcast. We'll see you next week on Dakota Town Hall.
See you next week.
Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly podcast. Episodes are available every Friday. For more information or to request availability, please go to dakotatownhall.com. Dakota Town Hall is presented in partnership with Home Slice Audio, produced by Leslie Klein. Music and audio production by Oakley Tai. Research by Home Slice Audio and Dakota Town Hall. Graphics by Timmy Grablander. Social media content by Scout Wheeler and website design by Trey Wynn. Editorial advisor and executive producer, Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Special thanks to all of our weekly guests. While we try to be accurate with all of our information, this show is recorded live and errors do occur. For corrections, please visit dakotatownhall.com. Hosted by Jake Schoenbeck and Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Dakota Town Hall, another Home Slice audio production.